slowly rolling into it and off of corner number four. It's showtime at Skagit Speedway.
As he exits corner number three and off of corner number four, Tyler Courtney wins the 50th annual Jim Raper Memorial Dirt Cup and pockets over $50,000 to do it.
It's showtime!
One car with the front of it that was junk and another car with the back of it was junk. So I cut both of them in half, took the good part of one car and the good part of the other car and welded up
the reason why I decided to, you know, move to Sean's number and use it was just because the memory of Sean was his V8. And, you know, I just kind of lived for racing and racing with his number just to remember him by.
Racing, and next thing you know, she's on the flag stand running, the, you know, doing flag and all my quarterback. I'm like, where did you come from?
You definitely have to want it. You know, you can't just say you want it. You got to want it. You got to have that desire that drives you.
I hope they just, like, soak it all in. Because you don't know when it could be over.
Oh, crazy Martin looks over. He goes, are we going 100 miles an hour? I've never gone 100 miles an hour before in my life. And I said, Martin, we've been going 100 miles an hour for the last 20 minutes. Why?
Sitting next to us, and I just looked at the track. And I said, this is absolutely gorgeous. This is a beautiful facility. He says, you think so? And I said, it is. And he says, my name is Jim Raper.
A Skagit Speedway nightcap.
But he would come down and stick his head in the cockpit just before Bob went out and say, no pressure, just win.
Well, welcome into this week's edition of On the Gas, a Skagit Speedway podcast. This week, we're joined by none other than Tyler Courtney, Sunshine Tyler Courtney, driver of the 7BC for Clawson Marshall Racing on tour with High Limit Racing. And Tyler, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing good. I just had a little bit of physical therapy to get myself back healthy again for 2026.
Well, you mentioned that, and I guess let's just kind of start right off the top with that. How are you doing, and are you still kind of on the line for recovery and wanting to be racing in February?
Yeah, no, everything's going really great. I had a couple of doctor's appointments in Iowa City last week. Got cleared by one, and then the other one, which is my back doctor, she cleared me, or she didn't clear me, but she's leaving it up to basically to my physical therapist to kind of determine that, and everything that I've been doing in physical therapy, they've been really happy with. So I would definitely say I'm on track to be on track in Volusia in February. And yeah, it's been a really good last couple of weeks, and it's been tough, but I've been working my ass off to get back.
How is this one compared to the last one a couple of years ago? Tyler? It's been a lot more rigorous.
Nine day. The one a couple years ago, I basically had little hairline fractures on three vertebrae, like little compression fractures. This one, actually split a vertebrae in half, and they had to go in and give, I got 10 screws and about three plates, fusing, from T5 to T9. So, quite a bit different. Obviously a lot longer recovery period. Last time I think I only missed a month of the All-Star season and was back, and yeah, this one, you know, happened July 17th, and I'm hoping to be back, you know, beginning of February. So, everything is looking great for that. So, you know, obviously if I had to, I probably could have pushed a couple issues here and there, but it wasn't going to do me any good, and wasn't going to do my team any good for me to push the issue to come back earlier than what my doctors are ready for.
Is it going to be odd not being in Tulsa racing this year? I mean, it's been a while since we've not had you in Tulsa during January.
Yeah, I think, you know, the only few times I've missed it, you know, were for, you know, racing in other, you know, like in New Zealand or Australia. And, you know, this year I'm not racing anything anywhere. So, my plan is still to go to, you know, to Tulsa and not for the shootout. I'm not going to go for the shootout this year, but my plan is to go for a Chili Bowl. Trying to talk Rigsby into letting me be part of some kind of the broadcast crew. I highly enjoyed getting to do that the last little bit there with High Limit and Chase and Tony. And obviously I know Chili Bowl, they've got, you know, they pull everybody from everywhere. So it would be cool if I could, you know, fit in somewhere into that picture. If not, I'm still going to go enjoy it and, you know, see all my friends that, you know, you only really get to see at Tulsa. Really your friends in Tulsa, you get to see there, and usually Knoxville. Uh-huh. You get to see them about twice a year. So it's a fun race for me. And it sucks not racing it, obviously, but I know the reason I'm not racing is for the right reasons and getting myself fully prepared for to go after a national championship next year.
On the injury side, what do you feel like the biggest thing this injury has either taught you or you've kind of learned from being out all this time?
Patience. I think patience for sure. And just gratitude, man. Just like just appreciating everything that you have in front of you and how quickly it can get taken from you. Like, you know, I had a little glimpse of it a couple of years ago, you know, but I was only out for a month. So you're like, you don't really think about it. You're like, oh, I'll ride back in the car. You know, we want our first race back out and boom, right back on, you know, on the racing. This one obviously is a lot different and, you know, a lot of dark times and, you know, not easy times, that's for sure. And, so just learning to be appreciative of everything that I've had in front of me and, not taking anything for granted really just cherish it every time I get to drive a race car. You're already blessed and fortunate to get to drive for a living and race for a living. Like just making sure you fully take advantage of that. Not everybody gets to do this. And I'm very fortunate to one, still be here and two, have the opportunity to get back in a race car at a winning level and try and make the most of it.
Your career, Tyler, let's kind of go through things a little bit. Your career, I've known you for 15 years now, which is hard to believe.
Yeah,
I mean,
since I was
living with Brian and at the house, and you were just kind of around sweeping the floor, trying to get that right. Your career, I don't know if race fans really realize how much you have grinded to get where you are from, you know, back in 2011 to about 2015 when you're sweeping floors to, you know, you're running the top motorsports car and really grinding when you were living with Spridge and I and driving a couple hours a day, driving 2 hours north to the race shop multiple times a week to get the hours in at the shop. And now you're one of the best sprint car drivers in the world. Do you ever kind of look back on that? And is it a little bit surreal to think where you were even 10 years ago to where you are now being one of the best wing sprint car drivers in the world?
Yeah, I definitely, it doesn't seem real a lot of the time. And, but I try not to, I guess try not to think about it too much. I just try to focus on what got me to this point. And, you know, that's putting my head down and working as hard as I can to be the best that I can be every time I hit the racetrack. And it's worked for me to this point. And, you know, hopefully it keeps working for me in the future. I've still got a lot of things I want to do in sprint car racing. But yeah, I think a lot of people, they look at me as basically just like CMR was the start of my career. Basically, that's what a lot of people see. I think that's how it is, like how people look at it. And they don't know that I did a lot, basically 10 years before leading up to that. And now I'm going in my 10th year with CMR, and, it's a lot of hard work and dedication. And, but I tell kids that ask me like what they need to do to, you know, make it in our sport. And I tell them there's only one person that can make it happen. And it's you. Obviously, you know, some things have to go your way or what, but you have to make those phone calls. You have to get told no. You have to, but if a guy does tell you yes, you got to go out and you got to perform, even if it's not in, let's say, a premier car. If it's just a middle of the road car, you have to go run good in that middle of the road car to get into a premier car. And you have to take advantage of every opportunity. And there's only one person that can make that happen, and it's you. And I feel like I've done a very good job of that, you know, leading up to this. And now I've got myself in a premier car with a crew chief that I bond really well with, a team that, you know, obviously fully believes in me. They, I'm on my second injury and haven't been fired yet. So, you know, I've missed out on a lot of, you know, key opportunities for us as a team. But I think that shows the support they have for me. And I think, you know, going into our 10th year here, it shows, you know, my dedication and my commitment to them as well.
I kind of want to peel back some of the layers of that onion before you got to CMR. But first, who do you kind of credit for getting you started in racing?
My parents, for sure. I guess even a little bit further back than that, my grandpa, he owned a racetrack, Putnam Building in Park Speedway. He owned it from 1980 to 96. And he competed in the sprint car. I wouldn't really say he raced in a sprint car, but he competed in a sprint car. you know, for a little bit. And then how he ended up with Putnamville is he got an argument with the guy that owned it previously, and the guy said, "Well, if you think you can do such a good job, just buy it from me." And he said, "Somehow I ended up with it." And he said, "So for 16 years later, I still had a racetrack." And so he raced, my uncle raced, and my dad raced, and then I have a twin brother, Taylor. Obviously, we started racing when we were 7, and you know, kind of went from there. So yeah, I mean, it's just in the family. I think my first race, or our first race, we were 2 weeks old out of Putnamville, and just kind of it's been all I've ever done my whole life.
What'd you even get in at 2 years old?
No, not two. So my first race that I ever was at that was two weeks old. I was 2 weeks old. Yeah.
Okay. Baby.
No. The first time I ever sat in a race car, we were 5.
Okay.
In our cul-de-sac. My brother couldn't get the car started. I hit a mailbox, and my dad said, "I think we're going to wait a little bit." So we waited till we were 7, and then we started racing quarter midgets out of Mini Indy.
That's what I thought was 7. Okay. That makes,
makes 7. Sense. Yep.
All right.
Yep.
When did the connection with Brian come together, with you kind of coming together with BC?
I always knew of Brian, right? Like, he raced quarter midgets and then micros and sprint cars, and he was this phenom, right? Uh-huh. That, you know, all of us looked up to. And then 2010 came along, and I was just racing micros at Peru at Logansport, and I wanted to make the next step, but I didn't really know how to do it. So me and my dad set up a meeting with Tim, and you know, kind of walked in and said, "Hey, I want to be a race car driver." And Tim, like, I mean, said, "Well, how much money do you got?" And I didn't have any money. I had no money. So I took the first two. I went 10 and 11 and just spent those two summers working with them, just learning how to do everything. And so the end of 2010, Chili Bowl 2011, I got to, you know, race the midget of the Chili Bowl, and kind of all game on from there. And so 2010 is really when I would say my true connection with Brian started, and it was awesome. Like that summer of 2010. Really opened my eyes to see that you can make a living in racing, not being in NASCAR or IndyCar. Like, I didn't understand that you could do that as a sprint car or midget driver, and do this at a high level and, you know, make enough money to make it substantial to be a job. And it was a great summer. I think we won everything. We won a championship. Like, it was just an awesome summer and something that I'll always remember and get to be a part of. And I think that summer proved to me that, all right, I don't have to go to NASCAR to make this, you know, a dream, like complete my dream. I can be a full-time race car driver doing this at the grassroots level, and just kind of switched my mindset to that and made it happen.
You said working with them, referring to Brian and what was the other?
Tim. Okay. Brian, Tim. Brian and Tim own the team. And then we had Corey Tucker. He was involved too. And then we had Big Al. He was, I guess, kind of a crew chief. And then AJ. Bullfrog. And then, Bullfrog. And then we had Kyle Robbins too. He was he was a crew guy, and then he raced himself too. So it was just a great group of people, man. And the office quote, you never know that you're in the good times and or whatever. Like, you guys know what I'm saying. Like,
yep.
you don't ever realize that you're living those moments until almost it's too late. And those are moments that I'll cherish for the rest of my life.
Those are some good moments. I mean, that
yeah.
We all kind of lived in that house right there at the shop summer 2011.
Yeah.
We were
it's crazy, man. Yeah, and it's crazy that it was 15 years ago.
Yeah, I lived with them summer 2011 when Tyler was working out there. I went out to Indianapolis and announced for USAC for a year. And Tyler was just around sweeping the floor trying to
work his tail off. Yep, and then just started working on getting rides. And I put my own car together for the end of 2012 and then ran my own sprint car for all of 2013. And then the end of 13, I started working at Indy Race Parts with Bernie, and I got so many sprint car rides just sitting at the counter working for Bernie, because guys would come in like, "Hey, we need a driver." I'm like, "I'll do it."
Yeah.
And so I drove anything and everything from 2014 to the end of 15, and then end of 15 is when I started with Top Motorsports, and that went from 15 to 17, and then I started full time with CMR in 2018.
I always say that Indy Race Parts is the epicenter of sprint car racing. Like every rumor, it is. The rides come through there, the rumors, everything.
Yep. Bernie, and dude, my time at Bernie's was amazing too. Like I learned so much about not only just racing, but the business side of things and just connections and connections that I've, you know, built on those from being at Bernie's and just having Bernie as a friend. Like he's always a guy you can call if you heard something or you think you might have heard something. He'll either confirm it or even if he doesn't know, he'll make it up and it's awesome. He's just him and Betsy are two great people, and sprinkler racing, especially in the state of Indiana, would not be what it is without them.
They're great, two just awesome people.
That 2017-2018 period feels like kind of a pivotal time in your career, right? 2017, you ran all three USAC National Midget Series, contended for two championships.
Yeah, he owes us back rent from that year, too.
Yeah, no kidding.
Money, I guess.
Yeah, that's what Spridge always tells me that, and I haven't seen an invoice yet. So
yeah, we're working on it.
But, I would say 2017, that was the first year we had CMR. And we did a couple races at the end of 16 after Brian passed away, and then 17 was the first full year. So, Chili Bowl 2017, I won my prelim night. Justin Grant won his prelim night with us. It was just a great Chili Bowl.
It was.
And then I think 17 we had Shane Golubic with Matt Wood as a part of our team too, and we won Midget Week. I think Shane got second at Turkey Night, second in the championship. Kind of that year, I kind of learned how to race for a championship. And that time I was racing the sprint car for top and the midget for CMR. And then 18, we started the sprint car at CMR, and we won the championship that year and then followed it up the next year with the midget championship. So, I would definitely say 17 and 18 were like pivotal moments in my career where I kind of broke out of, a shell, if you want to call it that, and kind of burst onto the scene a little bit.
Was it ever difficult jumping between the sprint car and the midget, because they're two kind of different racing realms? I mean, they're both non-wing cars, but was that difficult at all?
When you're doing it as many times a year as we were doing it, no.
Okay.
It just kind of becomes second nature, I guess, when you're doing it that often. Now I would say, like, if I come back from a wing car to a midget, that's a big difference for me.
Okay.
Obviously, for a guy like Kyle Larson and like Corey Day, those guys are just kind of freak of natures. It doesn't take them very long to get, acclimated again. For me, especially not racing a midget, but more than, three times a year, it takes me at least a night to get comfortable again and get going. Like last year I went out west with Paul and Kyle and struggled out west. We ran good at Turkey Night, but we blew a tire with, one lap to go. And then we went to Chili Bowl and almost locked in on our prelim night. So like it just took me a lot longer to get comfortable than from 2017 to 2021 when I was doing everything, all the time. Mm-hmm. It was easy for me to go back and forth. But now that I'm kind of super hyper focused on wing sprint cars, it is quite a bit more difficult for me to jump back in a midget and, go compete for a win.
Along those same lines, did you ever find your non-wing traits kind of leading over into, wing sprint car traits at all, or is it kind of still the same where you're doing?
I would say definitely some of my traits still kind of leak over into the wing stuff, and some nights it helps me and some nights it hurts me. I would say when we go to the short tracks, it definitely helps me doing things, that you don't have a lot of wing speed that's, pushing the car down. It's more of like a non-wing race. So I feel like short tracks, kind of benefits me for that. But, sometimes when I let the non-wing stuff bleed over on the bigger tracks, it does hurt me. But I feel like I've done a good job the last couple of years of kind of eliminating that and learning how to become a wing sprint car driver. And I think when you're racing against guys like Brad Sweet and Rico Abreu night in and night out, it definitely makes you step up your game. And, something I still got to work on, but something I'm definitely working hard at.
I think that's the cool thing is, Brian obviously had a huge influence on you, and I want to talk about him a little bit here. But, Brian, unfortunately, when Brian passed, he was right in the middle of that transition period to, I think, really kind of leaning the wing car. He was into a wing sprint car driver from a non-wing driver, and that's a transition that's not easy that I think he was really getting successful at. And you obviously followed in his footsteps 6 years later, after, or 5 years after he passed, and turned your very successful non-wing career into quite a successful wing career. Is that something you ever talked about with Brian? Was that transition period?
I don't know that we ever talked about it. I think we talked about it. It was just like, was he enjoying it? And yeah, he definitely was. Like, it was a new challenge for him. And I think that was the same thing for me, like coming over, like it's a new challenge. Like, we've kind of done what we wanted to do on the USEC side of things. Like, what can we do to keep pushing ourselves to be better and be on the forefront of, you know, where our sport's going. And I think obviously in 2021, wing sprint car racing was on the way up, and dude, now you look at it, like it's incredible. And I think we made the right move at the right time. And I think Brian, he was going to be uber successful at anything he ever did. And unfortunately, we just didn't get to see that come full circle. And, but I think right now, yeah, he'd either be running, you know, for an outlaw championship, if, you know, if not, maybe already won one by now, or be competing on a high limit side of things. And I think Brian would have been a high limit guy. I think he would have been a proponent for making just a change in the sport and for the better too. And I think that's, you know, one of the reasons that we are a part of high limit is just, you know, kind of going in that direction to keep building the sport and without, you know, really degrading it at the same time.
Brian, it would drive you nuts because he was the kind of guy that it didn't matter what he did, he was good at it.
Yeah, everything.
Pick up
everything.
A video game, he was good. Pick up, you know, basketball, good. Yeah. Race car, good. Any sport. I mean, remember the ping pong that we'd play in the basement, the ping pong table at the Shore House.
Everything.
I remember
everything
beating
he
him
was
in ping
so
pong.
Good at.
God, I finally beat him at something.
Yep, you're like, I'm never, I don't want to play you ever again.
Yeah, it was yeah. Incredible.
Well, that's like, but just how competitive he is. Like, so my first USAC win, I got to beat Brian. And for me, coolest thing in the world. He, on the other hand, was not super happy that night. But the next day, he did come up and, you know, congratulate me and all that kind of stuff. So, like, it kind of sucked the night of that he wasn't super excited. But also, as I got older, like, it didn't matter who beat you or who or what. You're just mad at the fact that you lost the race. Yep. And you know, obviously, like, I understand that now. So it's just but yeah, for me, for my first USAC national win of any sort, I got to beat, you know, the guy that I grew up idolizing, and, you know, he was my mentor. Like, that was one of the coolest things I could ever do.
Yeah, I think that Brian looks down and would be very proud of what you have accomplished. I think that obviously you've had a very successful career in the non-wing car and the midget, obviously championships there too. Your two all-star championships in Kings Royal. And is it crazy to how fast you guys adapted to the wing car? I mean, it was really half a season, I'd say, to transition period to the next year, full-time wing car champion.
Yeah, we did not expect that at all. Like, we obviously we had our goals, but I think our goals that you were, you know, win a race and you know, all that kind of stuff. Then we won that first one, and then, you know, we kind of, you know, changed our goals as the year went there, and then, you know, then we took the points lead in, you know, May or June or something like that. And
yeah, right before Speed Week, I think.
Yeah, then it you know, then it became like, okay, like we can do this. And it almost hurt us for the years following that, because we had such a great year there in 21 that we're like, what do we do now? Like, our first outlaw win was Kings Royal. We made the Knoxville Nationals. We won the championship. I think we won 8 all-star races that year. So, like, you almost set yourself up for failure the next year. You know, the next year we didn't come out as strong. Or we came out strong, but, like, then we kind of faded there in the middle of the year.
Yep.
You know, came on strong at the end, and we were able to pick up our second championship in a row. Then we're on our way to our third one, and, you know, unfortunately I got hurt. But if I had to lose a championship to anybody, I'm glad it was to Zeb and Rudine there. Like, it was – and the way that year ended with me coming back and me and Zeb battling out, like, the way it should be to go down to the wire of a championship, it was everything that you could dream of.
That 23 season probably will go down as one of my favorite years of sprint car racing. I mean, I feel like every all-star race we were on, I was on the edge of my seat calling it, because you guys just getting after it when you got back in the car. But one thing I forgot to mention, I want to talk about is when your first kind of dip into wing sprint car racing and how that went, and you got to do it with a legend and you ended up winning. How You have any good Danny Smith stories?
Yeah, I guess that wasn't, we lost that in the, that was a 2013, 2014 area there. But yeah, so 2013, I ran my own sprint car for the whole season, USAC, finished like 9th in points, rookie of the year. Well, got to the end of the year and Danny Smith had reached out and talked about running a wing car. I'm like, sure, why not? So we went to Lincoln, Illinois on a Friday night with the MOA series. First time ever in a wing car. I ran 4th. So the Christopher Bell won in the Fox Brothers car. Brian Brown ran 2nd. Terry McCarl ran 3rd. And Joey Mohan ran – sorry, I ran 5th. Joey Mohan ran 4th. I ran 5th. And then we drove from Lincoln, Illinois to Chillicothe, Ohio the next night, which that's where Danny lives. And I'm running like 3rd. Smith blows a tire. Then I'm running 2nd. And Caleb Griffith is in the the Rick Ferkel car. And he blew a tire as well. So I've kind of fell into the lead, but I ended up winning my 2nd night ever in a wing car. And now I look back and I'm like, man, I probably should have went wing racing a long time ago. Because my first ever win in a sprint car was with a wing, not a non-wing. And that's what I did for most of my life was non-wing racing, which is kind of crazy. But yeah, just to get to do that with Danny and just having that relationship with him. He is a legend. And
absolutely.
Like he's still racing, man, and he's still winning.
He's still winning.
I know it's not, you know, outlaw races or anything like that, but for him, he's doing everything that he wants to do as a race car driver. And I'm glad to call him, you know, one of my mentors and one of my friends.
Do you ever miss the non-wing midget side of things, or are you really just content where you are?
At times I do. Like, I think events I miss. Okay. Like, I get to do Four Crown and stuff like that, like SmackDown, or you know, I like Turkey Night and Chili Bowl, which I still try and do those. But I would say I'm overly content doing what I'm doing with the wing sprint car side of things, especially with how fast that side of things is growing and the potential for it to keep going and keep growing, you know, not only as a sport, but, you know, us as a team and me as a brand for myself. Just being hyper-focused on that and trying to make it the best that I can is super exciting for me. And I would say I'm even more excited now after obviously missing, you know, 6 months of what was going to be a great season. Just excited to get back and attack it harder than I did before.
Bear with me through this. I try to get my thought across. In the earlier days of sprint car racing, kind of when you started, you mentioned making a brand for yourself. I don't feel like sprint car racing was really at that point, but now it's, you know, it's shopsunshine.com, shoprico.com. Yeah. You've kind of seen the brands and the names of the drivers really kind of take over and move more into the forefront. Has that been a challenge or brought its challenges to kind of... You always are marketing yourself, but it seems kind of different. You kind of see what I'm saying?
I'd say it's always a challenge. Like, Rico's so freaking good at it, man. Like, he is, like, I would say he's the benchmark, right? Then I would say Gravel's probably 2nd at it, and then the rest of us are all just kind of fighting there for the rest of the top 5. But I think, and I got to thank Brian for this, but, like, him giving me the nickname Sunshine, like, it's helped me, you know, grow my brand, you know, faster than I would say most people can, because I think Sunshine's a very marketable thing and some of the people that can relate to. And I think my personality definitely fits my nickname. And so, yeah, it's tough, and I try to grow it as big as we can. And, you know, I'm getting married in a couple weeks. My fiance, Asia, she's helped me, you know, immensely the last couple of years, keep growing it. And it's part of her job too. So she takes pride in it, and it's been fun to kind of get to work together and, you know, put our brains together to keep kind of trying to grow it and, you know, make it great for fans and us and everybody involved.
And when he was given that nickname, I can tell you, he did look like Sunshine from the movie. It wasn't a stretch.
No, I had long blonde curly hair, and it definitely fit. That's for sure. But it's funny now, like, I don't even think half the time people even know that my real name is Tyler Courtney. It's Sunshine. Like, if you say Tyler Courtney, like, who? And you're like, Sunshine. Like, oh yeah, I know him.
That's a brand though. I mean,
that's the beauty of it. But, and, it's funny. I think one time I made a shirt that didn't have sunshine on it and people didn't buy it. Like, it wasn't even on purpose. It just kind of happened. And they're like, oh, I don't want it. It doesn't say sunshine on it. I'm like, oh, okay.
You know, you've got so many connections to Brian. And I think one connection, a big connection that many people don't realize is the sponsor on your car, NOS Energy Drink. I mean, that was a great partner of Brian's. I mean, think back to 2011, the amount of NOS Energy Drink we had in the shop that summer.
I drank so much NOS Energy Drink those summers.
Oh, man. We hammered it. That one that tasted like the mountain, almost like a Mountain Dew. It was like the green
can. And then so it's obviously a little bit different ownership mango. But from 2011 to when we started with NOS, like different ownership and managers and all that kind of stuff. But Lauren Albano has been, you know, the one constant with us with NOS Energy Drink since 17 or 18.
Yeah.
And it's been an amazing partnership. And talk about growing your brand, having a brand like NOS Energy Drink associated with you definitely helps that. And it's been amazing to be a part of the growth with her and her company and, you know, trying to take it to the next level and all that kind of stuff. And we get to do a lot of cool stuff, a lot of films and videos and all that kind of stuff each year. And we've got a great group of guys that are, you know, under the NOS banner. And it's a lot of fun making those videos that people get to watch and see in commercials and all that kind of stuff.
How big has Lauren been for you? I mean, obviously you talked about branding. She is so good at marketing her brand. Have you learned a lot from her about that?
Yeah, and I try to pick her brain as much as I can. Like, it's tough. I think for her, it's almost like it's like someone asking you about why you did something on the racetrack. Like, it's almost second nature. I think for her, like, she's so good at her job. Like, she's like, well, I just did it. You know what I mean? Like, so it's, but I think that's what makes her so good at her job, is that she is that good. Like, but yeah, I mean, if you ever have a question, or I think, and a lot of people go to her now, especially now that she's been around for so long, a lot of people have a personal relationship with her that can, you know, feel comfortable asking her, like, hey, what do you think about this or that? Or, you know, would you want to be involved in this event or that event? And, it's been cool to kind of see NOS keep growing. And, obviously it's been good for them to be a part of Grassroots, and hopefully it's a partnership that we get to keep for a long time.
You brought up the videos. Which one of those is kind of the most fun to film, or your favorite to film?
Man, probably there's two of them. Like, there's one at the Speedrome in Indiana that we had a bus, a limo, and a bug, and we're racing them and stuff like that. And we destroyed a lot of stuff that day. the year after that, we went to Irwindale and we all had slug bugs. And we raced those and had to do driver changes and pit stops and all that kind of stuff. Those are the fun ones. Like, when we're all kind of on the same playing field, like the bug one, and we're racing, and we destroyed stuff that day too. And it's a free for all. Like, when we sign waivers, you know, we're not trying to hurt anybody, but they want us to, you know, make great content as well. Those are a lot of fun. And then one of the ones we did was super difficult. So you had to, the driver was blindfolded, and you had a partner with you in the passenger seat.
Yeah.
And you had to just fully trust that guy. And we had a lot of close calls, but no, I don't think anything got crashed that day, which is amazing, because it was a beautiful Camaro that we were driving.
Those videos are fun to watch. Yeah. I mean, they do a nice job, and it has a feel to it that not often do we get to experience in grassroots racing. So I think that's what makes it so
good. It's a full blown production. It's amazing. It's like, I've never been in a movie, but I would say it's probably as close as you can get. Like, it's crazy. We do everything but pretty much makeup, because I don't think you can fix our faces.
No.
So
2022, let's kind of look at that here at Skagit Speedway, your first time here, and you won Dirt Cup. Your first time even kind of seeing that track was the Monday prior, and you won. What was that like coming to Skagit for the first time back in 2022?
Awesome. Like, way more fun than I've had the last couple times I've been because our results have not been great. But yeah, that first week that I got to come up there was Paul and Kevin Kozlowski on the 57W, which is now the W car. It was awesome. Like, I'd never been out there, always heard about Dirt Cup and all that kind of stuff. And it was I think that was the first year Kevin owned the racetrack, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So like, he upped the purse, and, I'm still mad at myself. I let Dominic lead the first 24 laps and missed out on some money, but I think we still took 76 grand out of there. And it was a great week and just a lot of fun. And, That part of the country is so beautiful, and it's just, and I loved going out there last year, even though we sucked. Like, just seeing the progression that you guys keep making with that place is amazing. And now we have the tough decision, like, do we come to Dirt Cup or do we go to Husitz? And I think for us, I think for us it's an even tougher decision, because obviously for the championship, like, a turning point for our last 2 years there has been Skagit. You know, you have three nights there that are all points paying events, and we know we have to get better. So it's definitely, we have both on the schedule right now, so it's going to be, I don't think it'll be game time decision, but it'll be a decision made a little bit later on.
Yeah. I think that you're not alone in that, but I'll be, you know, fully transparent. I think there's going to be a lot of high limit teams, or a good majority of them, that are, the decision's going to be made the weeks leading into Dirt Cup. It's not a decision being made in December, January.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, especially for where our team's based, it's hard to drive past Husitz for 450,000. Like, but also for our main goal and objective is the championship. And if we can come, you know, go to Skagit and race for a great purse as well, and get more notes for when we come back there when it counts, then which is also a big paying race, you know, it's going to be beneficial. So definitely a lot of conversations we're going to have, but it's just going to depend on kind of where we're at, and, you know, what's like, you know, if you heard engines or cars leading up to that, then you're probably gonna stay closer to home and go that direction. But if everything's looking good, then I think you just, you know, make the trek out there and go support Kevin and you guys for Dirt Cup.
Where do you feel like you need to be better at Skagit Speedway?
Everything. Okay. Top to bottom. Top to bottom. Like, the year I ran out there with our car, we just had a terrible trip. Like, everything was terrible. Like, we crashed, I think, every night. And so, like, and then we were slow. And then we went to port the next week, and we were slow there. So, like, I kind of had higher hopes, even though I wasn't driving, that Gio was going to be a little bit better, but we were still slow. So we just got to go there with probably just a little bit different package than what we expect, and just try to get better. Obviously, the 24 is extremely good there. And, you know, with Brad being gone, you're going to have to beat him in the 87 next year. And who knows? Like, I feel like somebody new steps up every year, and we just don't know who that is yet.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. That's the thing. High limit, you guys bring such a diverse group of characters out here that it's hard to pinpoint who's going to win. I know Rico's been on his tear, but I mean, if everyone comes healthy this year, knock on wood, it's going to be a brawl. It's going to be a brawl for 3 days.
And especially, and I don't know if you guys are changing your format at all, but just kind of like, if the format stays the same for Dirt Cup, it's a wild card format. So it's nutty. But that's what that event is. And I think that's what makes it special.
This summer, I mean, obviously, boy, I don't get the chance to announce too much anymore. I call a couple of races here, and I was on the call that night that you got hurt. I mean, I remember a couple of days following that, you sent the pictures of the car to us in the group chat. Do you ever look at that? I mean, that crash, my heart stopped.
It's gross.
It is. Yeah. My heart stopped. I mean, honestly, like, that was scary.
Yeah, it was. It wasn't pleasant. I think the best thing that happened to me is I don't remember any of it.
Yeah.
I think that's that's the best thing for me. And I think it's, we still have the car. I think it's something that a lot of people have learned from just looking at it, like what we need to do to make it better. And like, I saw the Outlaws the other day, you know, made a rule, like those bars I have, you know, from the hip rails up to almost the top of the frame, not the Barry bars, but the ones, you know, towards the cock, like the dash. Outlaws, you know, made them highly recommended for next year. And I would imagine year following, they'll be mandatory, just to give guys kind of a, you know, time to change their stuff. But I without those bars, I don't think we're having this conversation today. And I'm a firm believer in that. And if there's any positive to come out of my crash, is that we get to learn a lot. of how to make things better and safer, and, you know, keep making our sport as safe as we can. It's racing. Racing is dangerous. We know that as soon as we sign that pit pass sheet to get in, as soon as we strap in, we know the risk, and that's what makes racing so exciting, is the risk. And we just keep going from there.
I would say your car, if you're looking for a safe car, I'd call the folks at Schnee Lawson and give them a call. That car is a statement to how safe of a car that they build there Missouri.
Not one weld piece of frame was cracked. Anything.
Wow.
Like it was all crushed, but nothing broke, nothing cracked. It was just amazing. Brian and everyone at Schnee Lawson are amazing at what they do, and I could not be more proud to be in one of their chassis, and probably for the rest of my career at this point.
Yeah.
Did you say you still have the car?
Oh yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's still sitting there. It's got my seat in there. It's all torn apart. Like, yeah. It's just a frame and my seat.
Wow.
And my seat bent. It did its job. Like Darren Pittman with Ultra Shield and Dave Sharpley with Sharp Advantage. Like all of my safety equipment did its job. I was getting hurt no matter what with how I hit. Like, everybody wants to say one thing or the other. I was getting hurt no matter what with just the impact that I had and how I hit because of just the pure force of it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It was just a matter of how bad, and I think that this was best case scenario when you
go
back and rewatch that. That was breathtaking for sure. But happy, obviously, it was. You're well on the road to recovery, which is great, and we're excited to have you back here at Skagit next fall. Hopefully,
I'm excited, man. I'm just excited to be in the seat of a race car again. I'm itching.
You have to get back out here because Hager will have cards for you.
You know what? That's a selling point right there. Yeah. I'll make sure Jake knows.
Yeah, you give it Jake. I can get with Tim. I can say,
okay.
Hey, we can hit it from all angles, and I'm sure John will push it hard too.
Yeah, absolutely. No, we love coming out there, and it's definitely on. I think it's our first choice right now. It's just obviously going to depend on how everything leading up to that goes.
Yeah, I mean, we get it. I get it. I drove out here when I moved here. It's a tow. It's tough.
It's tough because especially like we start in Vegas, you know, then we come back and then we go out.
Back.
Yeah, like we'd have to. That would be our second trip there. Then we come back and then we go back out for the final swing there in August. So it's a lot of driving, but if you're determined to win a championship, you do whatever you got to do to make it happen.
I know you kind of appreciate the history of the sport. Let this sink in. You know, back 10, 15 years ago, maybe a little bit more than that, I'd say 2000s, the Outlaws used to do 3 swings to California. 3.
It's insane.
Isn't that crazy?
If you're a national, it's just different. Like,
yeah, it was different back then for sure. But yeah, they were running 120 nights a year too.
Yeah, and now we've kind of expanded. I think both series have expanded into different markets and to where, you know, we can kind of, you know, make a bigger schedule without having to, you know, make big swings like that where you're going mm-hmm. coast to coast, you know, multiple times a year. I do the California and, you know, Washington, Oregon fans want us out there that many times? Yes. Do we enjoy being out there that many times? Yes. But financially and to make it all make sense, you would kind of have to do the schedule that we have now.
How big is the merchandise game been for you? You've really seen it explode. Obviously, as you mentioned, your fiance and 3 weeks from now wife, Asia, has done an incredible job continuing to work with your fans and growing your brand. But how much of a focal point is that for you guys really kind of right now in the off season when you're not racing?
It's huge. Like racing is my first job. I would say merchandise is my second job. Mm-hmm. Like that's my second income. And I know we kind of beat the dead horse, but like the fans, like when they come and buy a shirt, like that goes a long way. And we appreciate the shit out of it. And it doesn't go unnoticed. And I enjoy being in the trailer when we you know, High Limit has the fan part of the night where we, after qualifying, we go into the trailer for 30 minutes and, you know, sign autographs, you know, that kind of stuff. I enjoy that because I, you know, people get to put a face to the name and, you know, get to know me a little bit on a more personal level than they would just watching me on the racetrack. So I enjoy that. And, it's a huge part of our life and our business.
That's something I take a lot of pride in, Tyler. It's just kind of watching from afar and seeing you interact with your fans and how much time you spend inside your merchandise trailer. I tell, you know, Levi Hillier out here, I told him, just pay attention to Tyler and how he interacts with his fans. You, Rico, there's a lot of you that do a great job, but there are some that don't. But it warms my heart to see how much you interact with your fans and how hands-on you are.
Yeah, and it's tough because obviously you have your nights where not everything's going great. So you got to put on that that happy face, and because those fans are there to see you. It doesn't matter if it didn't matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter if you qualified 18th or not. They don't care. They're just there to see you. So, and you know, you just suck it up and you know, go sign autographs, take pictures, and make those people that came and spent their hard earned money, you know, feel special and make them want to come back.
How do you kind of manage that side of keeping your merchandise full and stocked when you are on the road so much? How do you kind of, I know you kind of ship it track sometimes.
It's tough. It's definitely tough for sure. Especially because like you kind of have a set plan, like for the beginning of the year, like Asia does, like she's kind of like, she's got all our, you know, when we're getting designs and all that stuff laid out, you know, for the season now. Mm-hmm. But obviously sometimes you go to a point of the year where you're running really good and you're selling more than you expected. And then you're out of stuff and you're like, oh crap, like we're getting ready to go on the road for 2 weeks and we got nothing. Like we got to do something. And, it's a lot of work. It's tough, man. But you know, you try not to take those moments for granted either. Cause there's times where when you're sucking and you're not selling anything. So it's definitely a performance based sport on both ends. Like if you're not making any money in the race car, you're probably not making any money on the t-shirt side of things either.
What's it been like? You and Asia started another business this past year in Knoxville, you know, with the tanning business. What's it been like kind of learning that industry and trying to get that shop going down in Knoxville?
Yeah, and I would say that's a lot of her and her mom. Okay. I kind of just help make the initial investment here to get it going. But it's been cool. It's been cool to kind of learn, you know, another business. It's a pretty simple business. Pretty low overhead. Nothing too crazy, but it's definitely starting to pick up with the weather here in Iowa going towards the winter side of things and people wanting to come in and get some UV and just a little bit of happiness aside from the gray clouds outside. So it's been cool. And it's fun. It's just another thing to, you know, just kind of expand your horizon. And, you know, some of the things we learn on this side of things, we put into the t-shirt side of things too.
You guys have had a pretty good winter so far, though. I'd say that it's talking to my mom and dad that live.
I think we're getting ready to get. I think we get our first snow this weekend.
Yeah,
so
that's what dad said.
So it's been good so far, and we had a pretty decent winter last year. So I'd imagine this one's going to be pretty rough.
Have you gone to PJ's Deli lately for me?
I did. I went the other day, actually.
Oh, good. I appreciate
it. So good.
I would drive home. I'd fly home tomorrow to have PJ's Deli. I'd say that much.
Yep. I had Giovanni's for the first time a couple weeks ago.
I haven't had Giovanni's in 25 years.
Yeah, it was good. It was really good.
It's all my hometown. Then, Tyler lives in my hometown, but he got put on my part of my French shit list because Tyler moves from Indianapolis to all places my hometown and doesn't even say anything to me. I had to find out in the group chat he moved to my hometown. 15,000 people.
To be fair, you don't live there anymore.
I don't, but yeah. So I gave Tyler and Asia a list of places to go and.
Yeah,
there's a lot of good food. Giovanni's, boy, that's been a long time since I had Giovanni's.
Yeah,
they
good.
Still cut it like tavern style.
Oh yeah,
little squares. Yeah,
pizza.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
Yep.
Taco John's right next door. I could go for that.
See, I'm not a big Taco John's fan.
I know that's where I say you're an idiot.
Yeah, not a big Taco John's fan. Taco Bell through and through.
Really? Taco Bell's good, but it's not.
And
Taco
I would put Del Taco second, and then Taco John's maybe third.
Like shaking his head
on a
right
podcast
now.
It's just not. They have one good thing. They have their Olay's.
Yeah, the Olay's are legit. Yeah, there's.
But other than that, not a huge fan.
Is the house hunt going okay? I know you were talking about looking at maybe moving again.
Yeah, we've found a couple places, but we can't do anything unless my house sells. So
yeah.
And nobody wants it right now. So we're just kind of content. It's been not so bad. The mile long bridge is back open. So that helps immensely. Like
the dam?
Especially having a business. The dam was closed for a little bit, but they never full time like the bridge. So that made it difficult, especially, you know, starting a business and having to drive instead of 30 minutes, 40 minutes or 45
minutes
to get to. Yeah. So it's been a lot better having that open and we've been in kind of wedding mode. So just kind of put that on the back burner for now.
Yeah. What's that been like? We're 3 weeks out. I told you before we went on, I need to book my flight today. But
yeah, yeah,
yeah. We're 3 weeks out.
No, it's been good. Another thing that I'm pretty fortunate that I have a great fiance and her mom. They do almost everything wedding related. So I have a itinerary of when I need to show up and where I need to be, and I'm gonna follow that directly.
That sounds like the dream.
I know that. Is it December 15th off the top of my head?
13th.
Yeah, December 13th.
12/13/25.
There we go. That's easy enough.
Yep.
Yeah, I'll get it booked today. I will do that. All
right.
I keep stalling. I don't even.
The biggest thing is you got to book it for your Christmas too.
I know.
Your family Christmas.
I know. I need to do that too. But
yeah.
Apparently, I'm doing the introductions at your wedding. So
you are.
Your fiance talked me into that.
Yep. You get to do some announcing.
Yeah. I get to shake some rust off. You know, the dome, and then Tyler's wedding, and then
there you go.
Really get me ready for Shootout and Chili Bowl.
Yep. Sabre is getting ready.
That's going to be exciting. Another fun fact for you: he's got a twin that we.
Yeah.
Taylor.
Okay.
Tyler's sunshine, Taylor's moonshine. Yep. Oh. Did you know they aren't born on the same day, Eric List?
Oh, was it like a midnight?
Midnight.
One's born 11:50, one's born 12:01.
Yep.
So who was born first then?
My brother. So yeah, he was 11:30 on the 22nd. I was like 1:30 on the 23rd.
Tyler stalled. He was late.
Yep. Yep.
Well, Tyler, we're glad that you're well on the road to recovery, and hopefully we'll see you back in a race car here in a couple months down in Florida.
Yeah, I'm excited. So
hopefully see you twice.
Yeah, it's on the schedule. Yep. It's not cemented yet, but it's on the schedule. Pencil.
That's all that counts. And hopefully, I'll work on Rigsby. We'd love to have you. I'm sure. I think I can speak for all of us as part of the Chili Bowl broadcast.
Yeah, I would love to do it. I think I can add to it, and I just enjoy doing it. I've enjoyed seeing that side of the sport too, and it would make my trip worth it as well.
You did good. Well, we'll see you, Tyler, in 3 weeks at your wedding, then a couple weeks later in Tulsa.
Yeah, thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for joining, Tyler. We'll talk to you later. Take care.
Well, good chat with Tyler Courtney there. Appreciate him joining us, and as you heard, you're well on the way to recovery, and maybe see him a couple times out here next year. I think that, as I said in the interview, I think you're going to see a handful. Last year we had a couple, and I think you're going to see a couple more this upcoming season at Dirt Cup with the way the schedule lands for Kubota High Limit Racing. If you don't know, they are off for Dirt Cup, and the following week they race in Billings, Montana for the Race Redeemed Foundation race, which is 8 to 10 hours, I'd say, from here, kind of right halfway between us.
Yeah, about, probably.
Halfway between us and Huset. So I think you're going to see a handful of teams making that decision. Do they go to Huset or they come to Skagit and, you know, race for a six-figure purse and also get notes for a big three-day swing with the Skagit Nationals at the first week of September?
It was interesting to hear Tyler talk about, you know, Skagit Nationals come late in their year when the points are really kind of getting down to that nitty-gritty. And you always kind of thought about it, but I just really didn't put a lot of thought into, well, you're right, a good swing or vice versa, a bad swing, and the Skagit Nationals really could do a lot for points.
Three nights of racing for a schedule that is 60 races. I mean, you think that's 5% of their schedule. Doesn't sound like a ton, but 5% of their schedule at a key moment of time when they're really, you know, down the stretch, per se, to the championship with a lot of money on the line. And now they've introduced that charter system, and it's kind of a rolling 2 years. So you can really put yourself in position for some really, really good money in their charter system.
Yeah, 100%.
For years to come, because it's 2 years. Your two-year point average. So that doesn't just dictate 1 year. That can help dictate the following year as well, Eric.
Yeah, and that's where High Limit, you know, has kind of differed themselves and trying to change and innovate and go a different way, and that charter system and kind of rolling over points has been something that's different, but I think it's been taken really well, and it's going to be kind of fun to watch and follow because it's still in its infancy. And how does it do, you know, look 5, 8, 10 years down the road, and, you know, who's all still in it, who's maybe got a charter, maybe who's, you know,
who
sold or lost or what have you. And I think it will just add an interesting storyline kind of to that entire series.
I think it's unique. It's something different, and you want the other side of the perspective. If you go to the Dirt Vision social media channels, their YouTube, Connor Wade had a 40-minute chat with Brian Carter, the CEO and founder of World Racing Group, and they talked about that. It was a very candid chat. I thought it was pretty good. It's 40 minutes, and they really peeled back some layers in that interview that was very interesting. So you can kind of get the different viewpoints there on what they're trying to accomplish with the Outlaws and what High Limit. Obviously, we kind of align ourselves with High Limit with the involvement at Skagit Speedway, which is very good, and we've had a great, you know, great relationship with them. But you know, this past weekend, to shift gears, spent the weekend down in Portland at Warpa.
What was it? Yeah.
A lot got accomplished. I think, you know, Skagit Speedway, our schedule, we're starting to, the ink's starting to dry. Just a couple of things left to work out on that. John goes down to Reno at RPM, another racing workshop next week. I'll be in St. Louis for the Gateway Dirt Nationals on Flow Racing. If you're looking for something to watch, certainly check that out. That's is an entertaining and wild. There are so many verbs you could tie to what the dome is, but it's certainly entertaining, that's for sure. But nonetheless, I'll be there. John will be out in or down in Reno, and the NARC schedule starting to come together as well. They're not quite as far along as we are, I'd say, but really a lot got accomplished at Warpa. Then I think they're going to start to put the finishing touches on the NARC schedule down at Reno, which I'm excited for that to get rolled out. And 410s on the West Coast, we're really going to see some growth, I think, in the next year or two, for sure, which is exciting.
And that growth all just leads to kind of, you know, 26 promotions, you know, Kevin Rudine getting and acquiring NARC and now having, you know, Skagit as he has for a while. But it allows tracks and series just to kind of work together. That's a big thing, I think. Warpa helps with is it allows, you know, promoters and everyone down the West Coast and up the West Coast to work together, because the more you work together and the more, you know, hey, Skagit's dark one night, well, a track down in California has a big race, or Grace Harbor has, you know, a big race, or vice versa, or just things like that, I think makes sprint car racing healthier. It makes it better for everyone, because you have teams that, like we talk about, you whether you go to Husitz, you know, for the High Banks National, I think it's called, right?
Yep.
Off the top of, yeah. Or whether you come here for Dirt Cup, you know, teams look and they want to go run the big money events, and allowing, you know, just a little bit more fluidity kind of between the schedules and freedom is going to be a big thing.
You talk about working together. Well, today a kind of milestone announcement comes out of Central Pennsylvania. There's going to be a Central Pennsylvania Sprint Car Series, 47 races across Central PA tracks. $1.8 million up for grabs, $50,000 to win the points. They're all going to be minimum $6,000 to win, a minimum $500 to start, or $600 to start, right in there. I can't remember which off the top of my head, but good money there, an injection of money. And I think talking with a racetrack out there, talking with the folks at Port Royal Speedway this morning on my phone on the way to the racetrack before the announcement, it's gonna enable PA to kind of start to retain some talent that they've really kind of bled the last 10 to 15 years. And that's great news for Central Pennsylvania. I know there's kind of been mixed reviews from the race fans on social media, but that's to be expected with Central Pennsylvania race fans, because they are a passionate bunch, to put it the least. But I think it's a great thing for Central Pennsylvania, as long as they work together or continue to work together. Yeah. That's going to be big. But that's another thing in sprint car racing, where the injection of money that we've seen is going to be – that just going to add to it. It's going to be bigger than ever. And 2026 is really forming up to be a big year. And – you know, we're 2 weeks away from, or 3 weeks, 2 weeks away from PRI, and that's when you're going to start to see a lot of dominoes fall. I mean, Sheldon's announcement, I'm still blown away, hasn't been announced yet as to what team he's racing for. I think Sheldon going to KCP Racing might be the worst kept secret in sprint car racing, but that's all signs pointing to him being in the KCP 18, and then the Outlaws dropped, they dropped some nuggets on their schedule, not their full schedule, but the Buckeye Brawl is on there for multiple days. That's Sheldon's race. The race is next year. So, I mean, you can connect the dots there. You're pretty safe to assume you're going to see Sheldon back on the Outlaw Tour. But there's still several big several big diamonds out there, per se, on who goes where, who's in what ride. And I think, Eric, in the next couple of weeks, you're going to – it's. I know I've been saying that for a month now.
But but
PRI
it's true.
PRI is kind of really – where we see these announcements come, and I think it's going to come there. And then, shoot, we're a month away from Chili Bowl at that point, and then after Chili Bowl, we're 3 weeks away from Florida kicking off, and we're really in high gear again.
Any big diamonds you're particularly keeping your eye on? Or you just
I'm interested to see which way does JJR go, because there's rumors about that. I would say I'm leaning more towards them staying with the Outlaws.
Yeah, that would be kind of my thing.
That would be a big pull if High Limit could get them across the border, which we'll see. I mean, High Limit's got their swing down in Australia coming up at the end of June or end of December too. I forgot about. So that'll be fun to watch. But there's a couple of rides out there still left to be announced. And Johnny Gibson said the other day he expects three rookies on the Outlaw Trail next year. We've got one with Torgerson. I
figure out the other two.
My guess is Emerson Axum.
Yeah, okay.
And then I know Danny Sams is on the fence on if he stays high limit or if he goes to the Outlaws. If Johnny thinks there's three, I got to think that he's thinking Danny switches over.
Okay.
Danny had an impressive rookie year. He was a guy that came out to Dirt Cup.
Yeah.
So really, really nice young man. The hard family operation. And all other news that came out of the Midwest this year, Carson McCarl going to go in the Troy and Tammy Renfro own 2KS that is a staple at Knoxville Raceway. His older brother Austin won the track championship in 2018 at Knoxville in that car. Yeah. Ian Madsen got back in that car this year and ran it and finished out the year in that car. Ian's back over in Australia. He said he plans to be in a race car in 2026. So Ian's a big free agent out there. We'll see where he lands. But the 2KS has had a lot of drivers in it, but a lot of them have found success. And can I get on my soapbox here?
Go for it.
So one thing that drives me crazy. All right. Everyone seems to hate on – since we're talking 2KS, we'll stay 2KS. Everyone seems to hate on that car being a revolving door of drivers. We need rides in sprint car racing, 100%. Fans. Quit burning our bridges. Like, if they change drivers, so be it. That's their own prerogative. Like, we should just be happy that we have a car. Troy and Tammy Renfro continue to put race car drivers in that car and give drivers a good opportunity and aren't just saying, hey, I need you to bring $250,000 to drive my race car. They're putting drivers in their car and giving an opportunity. Let's be thankful that we've got an owner, regardless of if they have a Eric List in the car for two races and me for two races, and they change a driver every two races. Who cares? They're giving guys a ride, and it's a quality ride that's capable of winning. Yeah. So I just wish sometimes sprint car fans would maybe choose their words a little bit wiser, and you know, they continue to go after him. At some point, it comes to a head, and they may just screw this. We're done. Like, we're sell our car, sell the trailer, sell the motors, and $500,000 back in our bank account and ride off into the sunset.
Yeah.
But let's be thankful that we've got people that are willing to put people in a car regardless of how many races it is, right?
Especially in a time where cars are still – we're getting more and more cars, but it's definitely more expensive. I mean,
yeah, you look at motors, north of 70 grand.
It made me think of when we chatted with Bob and Lori Scott. I mean, you can go back and listen to that episode, but they had talked, you know, if they wish they still had their 410 stuff, but once you get out of it, it's hard to get back in because it's just a financial, you know, financial burden.
And
it's
time.
Just, it's very, yeah.
If you say, I mean, call up Kistler, call up Ryder and say you want a new 410.
Yeah.
You'll have one for next season, and next season's not 2026.
No.
I'm talking 2027. Mm-hmm. I mean, the lead time on these motors is significant right now, and that's not on the builders. They're a lot of times they're waiting for parts. So. Yeah.
And they've got a lot of orders too.
Like, they do.
You want a motor? Blake wants a motor. Tyler wants blah 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 blah. And you know it
There's
all.
A list.
Yeah.
So let's be thankful that we have car owners out there that are quality rides, putting drivers in there, and maybe let's. I know that this won't go far, but that's me on my soapbox for.
Hey, that's
fine. I look to the Buffalo Wild Wings ride in the '82 back in the day, probably a little bit before your time, but. They were very similar. They had a litany of drivers go through that car for four or five seasons, and a lot of drivers won races in that car. I mean, you look at the Outlaw races, Roger Crockett won an Outlaw race in that car. Dusty Zomer won an Outlaw race in that car. Brian Clausen qualified for the A-Main at the Knoxville Nationals in that car. Kevin Thomas Jr. won sprint car races in that car. Sammy Swindell won in that car. Justin Henderson won in that car. Like, they put a lot of drivers in that car and got a lot of flack from race fans, but every driver they put in the car won.
Yeah.
And they got to the point where the LaHaye family just said, we're done. We're done. And closed up shop. That was a good ride.
Yeah, it was.
So
I feel maybe vaguely remember what year was that?
That would have been mid-2010s.
I can vaguely remember.
I want to say
that.
They probably closed 18-ish, right in that neck of the woods, 2018. But nonetheless, quality ride that, you know, that let's not run car owners off.
It's so interesting to me to look back and just kind of follow the lineage of who's been in a car because. CMR, I don't know. I stumbled onto their page and just looking at their alum. I didn't know Donnie Schatz had been in a car at one.
Donnie drove a midget.
But still looking, I guess.
Chili Bowl. He drove the Chili Bowl. So their lineage is long because
that's
of
true.
The Chili Bowl. And they got out of midget racing. But, I mean, that kind of evolved. I mean, that CMR kind of evolved from Matt Wood Racing.
Yeah.
that Brian was driving for, and then Joey Saldana got in the car, and it kind of evolved out of that whole realm, Jack Hodenshield, and then Stenhouse, Matt, and then CMR that split, and it was a lot of good drivers. And then Tyler, obviously, is kind of at CMR been the lone full-time driver, per se, at Clawson Marshall, but Stenhouse Jr.'s had some drivers, and they were kind of together, and it was Ricky's still close. It's just, they got their own teams. But the midget-wise, I mean, CMR has been competitive in everything they've been in. Tyler won a USAC Midget Championship and a USAC Sprint Car Championship for them.
And he was dominant in those cars.
He was.
He was really good.
Chili Bowl, they rolled him out, and they were competitive every year in the Chili Bowl until they stopped doing that. But, you know, also another bomb we're waiting to drop on is Giovanni Selzy.
Yeah.
All signs pointing to him with Spire and CMR kind of going to a two-car team, but sounds like the 77 is going to be the number, which is a Spire number.
Carson Osevar.
And sounds like going to be based out of Charlotte, not out of Indy I'm hearing.
Interesting.
But still CMR tie, so I don't know how that relationship's going to go, or if it's just flat-out Spire. But nonetheless, it sounds like Eric Prutzman going to be the crew chief on that car, which will be Gio and Eric. I'll put my money on it. They're going to win some races. Eric's very talented crew chief. I mean, his Brad Sweet's Outlaw titles. Eric Prutzman was the crew chief. He backed off the road last year, went back on it for a minute, then pulled back away and kind of did some consultant work. But Eric's very talented. He was at TSR when I was at the All-Stars, and we worked at the All-Stars office was at TSR. So, you know, saw Eric a lot. He was on the 15 with Donnie Schatz for a long time as a car chief, won a lot of races under Rick Warner. So that could be interesting. I think Gio's very, very talented.
Oh, I do too.
Just needs the right situation, and he'll win a lot of races and contend for championships. And I think – you know, High Limit with the addition of that car, that's another title contender. That's 100%. A title contending car. You look at the title contenders next year with High Limit, it's going to be fun watching those races on Flow Racing. So if you don't have your Flow Racing subscription, highly, highly encourage you to get that now. It's good for the whole year.
Yep.
It doesn't just, you don't pay $150 and it expires on December 31st. You buy it today, it's good till next year. And you look at what you're going to get the next couple of weeks, you're going to get the Dome. You're going to get High Limit down in Australia. You're going to get Tulsa Shootout. You're going to get the Chili Bowl. Mm-hmm. Then the Lucas Oil Late Models kick off. Then High Limit kicks off. And you get Port Royal Weekly. You get the major events at Skagit Speedway are all on there. So a lot of racing to be consumed there. A lot of sports, wrestling, basketball, everything. So check out Flow Racing. And they got a lot on there. I mean, we watch it quite a bit.
Even if you're on the fence about the yearly, December is the month to just – get a monthly subscription.
Yeah.
Check them out, and then if you want, you know, if you like it, then re-up, you know, get the yearly kind of when High Limit comes through. But yeah, December, January, if you're looking for just monthly subscriptions.
And you can't get that through Flow Racing.
Yeah.
But if you go to Flow Softball or something like that, a lot of those have a monthly subscription price.
Did Flow Racing drop the monthly thing?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay.
They may have brought it back. If you can't find it, you can get a monthly
through another
Flow Vertical.
Oh, okay.
And with your subscription, you get all the sports. So just because you subscribe through Flow Softball doesn't mean you don't get Flow Racing. No, you get them all.
Yeah.
So if you go through a different vertical, go to Flow Softball or Flow Cheerleading, they've got all sorts of sports.
Yeah.
Different verticals offer a monthly subscription.
Okay.
So.
My apologies.
But no. They might have it now. It goes off and on racing. So if they don't.
Either way, check it out and see if it's there. Don't quote us on it, but.
Yeah.
Go the yearly for sure.
Check it out. It's good coverage, good racing, lots of good stuff on there. As you mentioned, December is going to be big. You're going to get the Dome. You're going to get High Limit in Australia. You're going to get the start of Tulsa Shootout. You won't get all of it, but we start on the 29th.
Yeah,
because I fly in the 28th. So the 29th, I think we practice quite a bit, and then we have some heat races in that night. And speaking of Shootout, geez.
What's that?
Last year, we were at 1429 on December 2nd. As of today, I just sent in an announcer's group chat. We are at, because I added it up this morning.
Let's see if I can beat you. Here we go. 1,336 entries so far as of November 12th.
So we're at 1,300. Yeah,
1,300.
Yeah, we're at 1,336. Yeah, so
I
think they had
November
some changes.
12th.
Okay. So I got to 1,309. So sometimes they drop some.
Yeah,
add some because guys back out. But nonetheless, we're well north of 1,300. So we're pacing good. Chili Bulls at 162 right now. So Brian just dropped a bunch of them on today. And also keep in mind this weekend we have the Turkey Night Grand Prix Saturday night. Because when this comes out, Kern runs tonight. That'll be done in the books. USAC races the Jason Loeffler Memorial tonight for 12,000.
Well, if you're listening to it on Wednesday, watch it tonight.
Yeah, if you're listening today, then watch tonight. But if you're not, Saturday.
That's a Wednesday race, right? Or no, I'm thinking
tonight.
Tuesday. Oh, never mind. Okay, yeah, you're
tonight.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, so you won't be able to see that. But we won't cover that because this will come out post-winter. But that'll be a good one. Saturday night, Turkey Night Grand Prix, though. So that's going to be fun. I love that race. Ventura's fun. Really, really fun to watch. So USAC Midgets wrap up their schedule, and then next weekend we have the Dome. So hope everyone has a good Thanksgiving, Eric. Lots of food to eat.
I'm excited.
You got any thoughts before we wrap it up?
No, not at all.
All right. Well, next week you'll have a guest because I fly to St. Louis on Wednesday. Unless, we could do something early in the week too. But nonetheless, we'll have an episode next week, whether it's me or you and Caleb, you and Justin. I think you reached out to JY. So
JY, whether he's busy or
he'll get
something.
He mentioned it. So we'll have an episode next week, and then we'll come back and I'll recap the Dome and we'll talk. What's the PRI at that point? Because it'll be kicking off that following weekend. So 2 weeks from now, we'll kind of have a recap episode of maybe what comes out of PRI and what's going to happen in 2026. We'll have a good idea, and then we'll get to lean into Shootout and Chili Bowl. So I'll miss a couple of episodes late December, early January, but you'll be in good hands with JY.
Oh, yeah. Or yourself, JY, Caleb talked to JY at the Deming Bank. Was like, hey, you or Caleb or someone, and he's like, yeah, so.
Caleb and I will both be in Tulsa for 2 weeks there, so you'll have to swing for the fences with JY, but he's excited. JY does a great job. He's a good dude. But, it's going to be a big month here in racing. Check it out. Subscribe. Share it. Like it. Help us out. We're trying to continue to grow this podcast. And check out our YouTube channel. We're continuing to post some old races. This week we've got 1993 Dirt Cup that we recorded, so maybe
which was really cool. A lot of good old interviews in there.
One of them we talked about the National Sprint Car Hall of Famers that were interviewed at the top of the show. So we've got a lot of 1986 that we've got in our Rolodex too. So a lot of 97. We're continually adding to that Rolodex. So keep in touch with our YouTube channel. There's a playlist. I think I just have it: Skagit Speedway Classics. That every time I add one, I just add it to that playlist. So if you're looking to watch some old races for a while, just click that playlist and let it play.
There you go.
But that's on our YouTube channel. Make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel.
Yeah, follow us on YouTube at Skagit Speedway. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Snapchat, and Twitter, all at Skagit Speedway.
Easy.
Yeah, it's simple. Other than that, thank you for joining us again on this week's edition of On the Gas, a Skagit Speedway podcast. Take care and happy Thanksgiving, everyone.